Plato and Aristotle, Lecture 8. Aristotle, Patience with Complexity.
At the end of the last lecture, we looked forward to beginning now the second half of this course of lectures, in which we're going to be talking about the other great giant of ancient Greek philosophy, Aristotle. In this lecture, I'm going to say some introductory things about Aristotle, telling you first a little bit about his life, making some remarks about what it's like to read Aristotle and how we best can read Aristotle and listen to what I'm going to be talking about, and some remarks about what it is that we're actually going to be discussing in these subsequent lectures. So let me say first a little bit about Aristotle's life. Aristotle was a Macedonian, born to a somewhat prosperous family in the town of Stagira, which is well north of mainland Greece, on a peninsula that sticks out into the northern Aegean. The small town in which he's born is now being restored, and as a matter of fact, if you travel to that part of Greece, up into Macedonia, you can actually visit the town where Aristotle was born, which is now being excavated and rebuilt. It's quite an interesting place to see. When he was a teenager, around 17 or so, Aristotle moved to Athens. He was actually moved by his uncle to study with Plato at the academy, and he stayed there some 20 years until Plato's death in the year 347 before the Common Era. He then spent several years doing biological research on the island of Lesbos, studying the marine life and all forms of life there. We're going to later on be talking about Aristotle's life as a biologist, after which he served as the tutor to the son of the king of Macedon, King Philip, a young man who grew up to be Alexander the Great. After Philip's death, Aristotle returned to Athens and founded his own school called the Lyceum, where for some 10 to 15 years he lectured on philosophy and wrote philosophy and talked with his colleagues and students. So it was a life largely devoted to study and teaching and thought about a wide spectrum of things. By some lights, perhaps a less eventful life than that of his pupil Alexander, but a life that was, as a matter of fact, like Alexander's, enormously influential in the subsequent history of Europe and Asia alike. Well, second in this lecture, I want to reiterate some of the things I said at the beginning of our discussions of Plato's some time ago. One is that, again, you'll be likely to get most out of these lectures if you're able to accompany your listening with reading at least some of the texts which we'll talk about. With Aristotle, this will be in some respects easier and in some respects more difficult than it was with Plato. And both of these features, both the fact that it will be easier and the fact that it will be more difficult, are the results of the kinds of texts of Aristotle that survive. Perhaps because he already had a reputation in his lifetime as a literary master, Plato's dialogues, the dialogues of Plato, have survived to us in rather complete form. But the body of Aristotle's work that has come to us from antiquity, although it's considerable, and although it represents perhaps only a quarter of what he wrote, is not of the same sort as the texts that come to us of Plato. On the whole, these works are not polished and well-crafted works intended for publication, or whatever the analog of publication was in the ancient world. They read rather like outlines for lectures that Aristotle gave to his students in the Lyceum, or perhaps notes that some of those students took from his lectures. There's a kind of interesting irony here in the difference between what remains to us of Plato and what we have of Aristotle. We know, as a matter of fact, that Plato also lectured, but we have a very sketchy idea of what his lectures were about. And we know as well from fragments of doxographers, that is, subsequent scholars who collected the opinions of philosophers, as well as from later philosophers themselves, that Aristotle also wrote dialogues. But of these, there remain only fragments, the barest indication of what sort of writing Aristotle did in his more polished form. What we have instead are texts that are, as you will find out if you open Aristotle, dense, elliptical, terse, and often quite baffling. And the result is that it's hard to read Aristotle, but in a somewhat different way from that in which it's hard to read Plato. There's little in Aristotle of the literary irony that's in Plato, an irony that requires us to think, when we read Plato, deeply and wittily about what the point is of a particular argument at any particular moment in the dialogues. Reading Aristotle demands a different kind of decoding or a different kind of thinking through the text. It's less like reading Shakespeare than reading Plato is, and more like reading a textbook, and a rather badly written textbook at that. So Aristotle seems immediately more dense, more impenetrable than Plato.